far, far away in the west, where things were blue and faint, Bilbo knew there lay his own country of safe and comfortable things, and his little hobbit hole. He shivered. It was getting bitter cold up here, and the wind came shrill among the rocks. Boulders, too, at times came galloping down the mountainsides, let loose by midday sun upon the snow, and passed among them, which was lucky, or over their heads, which was alarming. The nights were comfortless and chill, and they didn't dare to sing or talk too loud, for the echoes were uncanny, and the silence seemed to dislike being broken, except by the noise of water and the wail of wind and the crack of stone. "The summer's getting on down below," thought Bilbo, "and haymaking's going on, and picnics. They'll be harvesting and blackberrying before we even begin to go down the other side at this rate." And the others were thinking equally gloomy thoughts, although when they had said goodbye to Elrond in the high hope of a midsummer morning, they'd spoken gaily of the passage of the mountains and of riding swift across the lands beyond. They'd thought of coming to the secret door in the lonely mountain, perhaps that very next first moon of autumn. "And perhaps it will be Durin's Day," they had said. Only Gandalf had shaken his head and said nothing. Dwarves had not passed that way for many years, but Gandalf had, and he knew how evil and danger had grown and thriven in the wild, since the dragons had driven men from the lands, and the goblins had spread in secret after the Battle of the Mines of Moria. Even the good plans of wise wizards like Gandalf and of good friends like Elrond go astray sometimes when you're off on dangerous adventures over the edge of the wild. And Gandalf was a wise enough wizard to know it. He knew that something unexpected might happen, and he hardly dared to hope that they would pass without fearful adventure over those great tall mountains with lonely peaks and valleys where no king ruled. They did not. All was well, until one day they met a thunderstorm, more than a thunderstorm, a thunder battle. You know how terrific a really big thunderstorm can be down in the land and in a river valley, especially at times when two great thunderstorms meet and clash. More terrible still are thunder and lightning in the mountains at night, when storms come up from east and west and make war. The lightning splinters on the peaks, and rocks shiver, and great crashes split the air and go rolling and tumbling into every cave and hollow, and the darkness is filled with overwhelming noise and sudden light. Bilbo had never seen or imagined anything of the kind. They were high up in a narrow place, with a dreadful fall into a dim valley at one side of them. There they were sheltering under a hanging rock for the night, and he lay beneath a blanket and shook from head to toe. When he peeped out into the lightning flashes, he saw that across the valley the stone giants were out and were hurling rocks at one another for a game, and catching them, and tossing them down into the darkness, where they smashed among the trees far below, or splintered into little bits with a bang. Then came a wind and a rain, and the wind whipped the rain and the hail about in every direction, so that an overhanging rock was no protection at all. Soon they were getting drenched, and their ponies were standing with their heads down and their tails between their legs, and some of them were whinnying with fright. They could hear the giants guffawing and shouting all over the mountainsides.
"This won't do at all," said Thorin. "If we don't get blown off or drowned or struck by lightning, we shall be picked up by some giant and kicked sky-high for a football." "Well, if you know of anything better, take us there," said Gandalf, who was feeling very grumpy and was far from happy about the giants himself.
The end of their argument was that they sent Feely and Keely to look for a better shelter. They had very sharp eyes, and being the youngest of the dwarves by some 50 years, they usually got these sorts of jobs, when everybody could see that it was absolutely no use sending Bilbo. There is nothing like looking if you want to find something, or so Thorin said to the young dwarves. You certainly usually find something if you look, but it is not always quite the something you were after. So it proved on this occasion. Soon Feely and Keely came crawling back, holding on to the rocks in the wind.
"We've found a dry cave," they said. "Not far round the next corner, and ponies and all could get inside." "Have you thoroughly explored it?" said the wizard, who knew that caves up in the mountains were seldom unoccupied. "Yes, yes," they said, though everybody knew they could not have been long about it. They had come back too quick. "It isn't all that big, and it doesn't go far back."
That, of course, is the dangerous part about caves. You don't know how far they go back, sometimes, or where a passage behind may lead to, or what is waiting for you inside. But now Feely and Keely's news seemed good enough, so they all got up and prepared to move. The wind was howling and the thunder still growling, and they had a business getting themselves and their ponies along. Still, it was not very far to go, and before long they came to a big rock standing out into the path. If you stepped behind, you found a low arch in the side of the mountain. There was just room to get the ponies through with a squeeze when they had been unpacked and unsaddled. As they passed under the arch, it was good to hear the wind and the rain outside instead of all about them, and to feel safe from the giants and their rocks. But the wizard was taking no risks. He lit up his wand, as he did that day in Bilbo's dining room that seemed so long ago, if you remember, and by its light they explored the cave from end to end. It seemed quite a fair size, but not too large and mysterious. It had a dry floor and some comfortable nooks. At one end there was a room for the ponies, and there they stood, mighty glad of the change, steaming and champing in their nosebags. Oin and Gloin wanted to light a fire at the door to dry their clothes, but Gandalf wouldn't hear of it. So they spread out their wet things on the floor and got dry ones out of their bundles. Then they made their blankets comfortable, got out their pipes and blue smoke rings, which Gandalf turned into different colours and set dancing up by the roof to amuse them. They talked and talked, and forgot about the storm, and discussed what each would do with his share of the treasure when they got it, which at the moment did not seem so impossible, and so they dropped off to sleep one by one. And that was the last time that they used the ponies, packages, baggages, tools and paraphernalia that they had brought with them. It turned out a good thing that night that they had brought little Bilbo with them after all, for somehow he could not go to sleep for a long while, and when he did sleep he had very nasty dreams. He dreamed that a crack in the wall at the back of the cave got bigger and bigger and opened wider and wider, and he was very afraid but could not call out or do anything but lie and look. Then he dreamed that the floor of the cave was giving way, and he was slipping, beginning to fall down, down, goodness knows where to. At that he woke up with a horrible start, and found that part of his dream was true. A crack had opened at the back of the cave, and was already a wide passage. He was just in time to see the last of the ponies' tails disappearing into it. Of course he gave a very loud yell, as loud a yell as a hobbit can give, which is surprising for their size. Out jumped the goblins, big goblins, great ugly-looking goblins, lots of goblins, before you could say rocks and blocks. There were six to each dwarf at least, and two even for Bilbo, and they were all grabbed and carried through the crack before you could say tinder and flint. But not Gandalf. Bilbo's yell had done that much good. It had wakened him up wide in a splintered second, and when goblins came to grab him, there was a terrible flash like lightning in the cave, a smell like gunpowder, and several of them fell dead. The crack closed with a snap, and Bilbo and the dwarves were on the wrong side of it. Where was Gandalf? Of that neither they nor the goblins had any idea, and the goblins did not wait to find out. It was deep, deep, dark, such as only goblins that have taken to living in the heart of the mountains can see through. The passages there were crossed and tangled in all directions, but the goblins knew their way, as well as you do, to the nearest post office, and the way went down and down, and it was most horribly stuffy. The goblins were very rough, and pinched unmercifully, and chuckled and laughed in their horrible stony voices, and Bilbo was more unhappy even than when the troll had picked him up by his toes. He wished again and again for his nice bright hobbit hole, not for the last time. Now there came a glimmer of red light before them. The goblins began to sing, or croak, keeping time with the flap of their feet on the stone, and shaking their prisoners as well.
Clap, snap, the black crack, grip, grab, pinch, nab, and down, down to Goblin Town you go, my lad. Clash, crash, crash, smash, hammer and tongs, knocker and gongs, pound, pound, far underground, ho-ho, my lad. Swish, smash, whip, crack, batter and beat, yammer and bleat, work, work, nor dare to shirk, while goblins quaff and goblins laugh. Round and round, far underground, below, my lad.
It sounded truly terrifying. The walls echoed to the clap, snap, and the crush, smash, and to the ugly laughter of their ho, ho, my lad. The general meaning of the song was only too plain, for now the goblins took out whips and whipped them with a swish smack, and set them running as fast as they could in front of them, and more than one of the dwarves were already yammering and bleating like anything when they stumbled into a big cavern. It was lit by a great red fire in the middle, and by torches along the walls, and it was full of goblins. They all laughed and stamped and clapped their hands when the dwarves, with poor little Bilbo at the back and nearest to the whips, came running in, while the goblin drivers whooped and cracked their whips behind. The ponies were already there, huddled in a corner, and there were all the baggages and packages lying broken open and being rummaged by goblins, and smelt by goblins, and fingered by goblins, and quarrelled over by goblins. I'm afraid that was the last they ever saw of those excellent little ponies, including a jolly sturdy little white fellow that Elrond had lent to Gandalf, since his horse was not suitable for the mountain paths. For goblins eat horses and ponies and donkeys, and other much more dreadful things, and they're always hungry. Just now, however, the prisoners were thinking only of themselves. The goblins chained their hands behind their backs and linked them all together in a line and dragged them to the far end of the cavern with little Bilbo tugging at the end of the row. There in the shadows on a large flat stone sat a tremendous goblin with a huge head, and armed goblins were standing round him carrying the axes and bent swords that they use. Now goblins are cruel, wicked, and bad-hearted. They make no beautiful things, but they make many clever ones. They can tunnel and mine as well as any but the most skilled dwarves when they take the trouble, though they are usually untidy and dirty. Hammers, axes, swords, daggers, pickaxes, tongs, and also instruments of torture they make very well, or get other people to make to their design, prisoners and slaves that have to work till they die for want of air and light. It is not unlikely that they invented some of the machines that have since troubled the world, especially the ingenious devices for killing large numbers of people at once, for wheels and engines and explosions always delighted them, and also not working with their own hands more than they could help. But in those days and those wild parts they had not advanced, as it is called, so far. They did not hate dwarves especially, no more than they hated everybody and everything, and particularly the orderly and prosperous. In some parts wicked dwarves had even made alliances with them. But they had a special grudge against Thorin's people, because of the war which you have heard mentioned, but which does not come into this tale. And anyway, goblins don't care who they catch, as long as it is done smart and secret, and the prisoners are not able to defend themselves.
"Who are these miserable persons?" said the great goblin.
"Dwarves, and this," said one of the drivers, pulling at Bilbo's chain so that he fell forwards onto his knees. "We found them sheltering in our front porch."
"What do you mean by it?" said the great goblin, turning to Thorin. "Up to no good, I'll warrant. Spying on the private business of my people, I guess. Thieves, I shouldn't be surprised to learn. Murderers and friends of elves, not unlikely. Come, what have you got to say?"
"Thorin the dwarf at your service," he replied. It was merely a polite nothing. "Of the things which you suspect and imagine, we had no idea at all. We sheltered from a storm in what seemed a convenient cave and unused. Nothing was further from our thoughts than inconveniencing goblins in any way whatever."
That was true enough.
Said the great goblin. "So you say. Might I ask what you were doing up in the mountains at all? And where you were coming from? And where you were going to? In fact, I should like to know all about you. Not that it will do you much good, Thorin Oakenshield. I know too much about your folk already. But let's have the truth, or I will prepare something particularly uncomfortable for you. We were on a journey to visit our relatives, our nephews and nieces, and first, second, and third cousins, and the other descendants of our grandfathers, who live on the east side of these truly hospitable mountains," said Thorin, not quite knowing what to say all at once in a moment, when obviously the exact truth would not do at all.
"He is a liar, O truly tremendous one," said one of the drivers. "Several of our people were struck by lightning in the cave when we invited these creatures to come below, and they are as dead as stones. Also, he has not explained this."
He held out the sword which Thorin had worn, the sword which came from the troll's lair.
This ends Disc 2, The Hobbit, Disc 3.
The great goblin gave a truly awful howl of rage when he looked at it, and all his soldiers gnashed their teeth, clashed their swords, and stamped. They knew the sword at once. It had killed hundreds of goblins in its time, when the fair elves of Gondolin hunted them in the hills or did battle before their walls. They had called it Orcrist, Goblin Cleaver, but the goblins called it simply Biter. They hated it, and hated worse anyone that carried it.
"Murderers and elf friends!" the great goblin shouted. "Slash them, beat them, bite them, gnash them. Take them away to dark holes full of snakes, and never let them see the light again."
He was in such a rage that he jumped off his seat and himself rushed at Thorin with his mouth open. Just at that moment all the lights in the cavern went out, and the great fire went off, poof, into a tower of blue glowing smoke, right up to the roof, that scattered piercing white sparks all among the goblins. The yells and yammering, croaking, gibbering and jabbering, howls, growls and curses, shrieking and shrieking, that followed were beyond description. Several hundred wild cats and wolves being roasted slowly alive together would not have compared with it. The sparks were burning holes in the goblins, and the smoke that now fell from the roof made the air too thick for even their eyes to see through. Soon they were falling over one another and rolling in heaps on the floor, biting and kicking and fighting as if they had all gone mad. Suddenly a sword flashed in its own light. Bilbo saw it go right through the great goblin as he stood dumbfounded in the middle of the rage. He fell dead, and the goblin soldiers fled before the sword, shrieking into the darkness. The sword went back into its sheath.
"Follow me quick," said a voice fierce and quiet, and before Bilbo understood what had happened he was trotting along again, as fast as he could trot, at the end of the line, down more dark passages, with the yells of the goblin hall growing fainter behind him. A pale light was leading them on.
"Quicker, quicker," said the voice. "The torches will soon be relit."
"Half a minute,"
said Dory, who was at the back next to Bilbo, and a decent fellow. He made the hobbit scramble on his shoulders as best he could with his tied hands, and then off they all went at a run, with a clink-clink of chains, and many a stumble, since they had no hands to steady themselves with. Not for a long while did they stop, and by that time they must have been right down in the very mountain's heart. Then Gandalf lit up his wand. Of course it was Gandalf. But just then they were too busy to ask how he got there. He took out his sword again, and again it flashed in the dark by itself. It burned with a rage that made it gleam if goblins were about. Now it was bright as blue flame for delight in the killing of the great lord of the cave. It made no trouble whatever of cutting through the goblin chains and setting all the prisoners free as quickly as possible. This sword's name was Glamdring the Foehammer, if you remember. The goblins just called it Beater, and hated it worse than Biter, if possible. Orcrist, too, had been saved, for Gandalf had brought it along as well, snatching it from one of the terrified guards. Gandalf thought of most things, and though he could not do everything, he could do a great deal for friends in a tight corner.
"Are we all here?"
said he, handing his sword back to Thorin with a bow.
"Let me see. One, that's Thorin. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Where are Feely and Keely? Here they are, 12, 13. And here's Mr. Baggins, 14. Well, well, it might be worse. And then again, it might be a good deal better. No ponies and no food and no knowing quite where we are. And hordes of angry goblins just behind. On we go."
On they went. Gandalf was quite right. They began to hear goblin noises and horrible cries far behind in the passages they had come through. That sent them on faster than ever, and as poor Bilbo could not possibly go half as fast, for dwarves can roll along at a tremendous pace, I can tell you, when they have to, they took it in turn to carry him on their backs. Still, goblins go faster than dwarves, and these goblins knew the way better. They had made the paths themselves, and were madly angry. So that, do what they could, the dwarves heard the cries and howls getting closer and closer. Soon they could hear even the flap of the goblin feet, many, many feet which seemed only just round the corner. The blink of red torches could be seen behind them in the tunnel they were following, and they were getting deadly tired.
"Why, oh, why did I ever leave my hobbit hole?" said poor Mr. Baggins, bumping up and down on Bomber's back.
"Why, oh, why did I ever bring a wretched little hobbit on a treasure hunt?" said poor Bomber, who was fat and staggered along with the sweat dripping down his nose in his heat and terror.
At this point Gandalf fell behind, and Thorin with him. They turned a sharp corner.
"About turn," he shouted. "Draw your sword, Thorin."
There was nothing else to be done, and the goblins did not like it. They came scurrying round the corner in full cry, and found Goblin Cleaver and Foe Hammer shining cold and bright right in their astonished eyes. The ones in front dropped their torches and gave one yell before they were killed. The ones behind yelled still more, and leapt back, knocking over those that were running after them.
"Biter and beater!" they shrieked,
and soon they were all in confusion, and most of them were hustling back the way they had come. It was quite a long while before any of them dared to turn that corner. By that time the dwarves had gone on again, a long, long way on into the dark tunnels of the goblins' realm. When the goblins discovered that, they put out their torches, and they slipped on soft shoes, and they chose out their very quickest runners with the sharpest ears and eyes. These ran forward as swift as weasels in the dark, and with hardly any more noise than bats. That is why neither Bilbo, nor the dwarves, nor even Gandalf heard them coming. Nor did they see them. But they were seen by the goblins that ran silently up behind, for Gandalf was letting his wand give out a faint light to help the dwarves as they went along. Quite suddenly Dori, now at the back again carrying Bilbo, was grabbed from behind in the dark. He shouted and fell, and the hobbit rolled off his shoulders into the blackness, bumped his head on hard rock, and remembered nothing more. Chapter 5 Riddles in the Dark. When Bilbo opened his eyes, he wondered if he had, for it was just as dark as with them shut. No one was anywhere near him. Just imagine his fright. He could hear nothing, see nothing, and he could feel nothing except the stone of the floor. Very slowly he got up and groped about on all fours, till he touched the wall of the tunnel. But neither up nor down it could he find anything. Nothing at all. No sign of goblins, no sign of dwarves. His head was swimming, and he was far from certain even of the direction they had been going in when he had his fall. He guessed as well as he could, and crawled along for a good way, till suddenly his hand met what felt like a tiny ring of cold metal lying on the floor of the tunnel. It was a turning point in his career, but he didn't know it. He put the ring in his pocket almost without thinking. Certainly it didn't seem of any particular use at the moment. He didn't go much further, but sat down on the cold floor and gave himself up to complete miserableness for a long while. He thought of himself frying bacon and eggs in his own kitchen at home, for he could feel inside that it was high time for some meal or other, but that only made him miserabler. He couldn't think what to do, nor could he think what had happened, or why he had been left behind, or why, if he had been left behind, the goblins hadn't caught him, or even why his head was so sore. The truth was he had been lying quiet, out of sight and out of mind, in a very dark corner for a long while. After some time he felt for his pipe. It was not broken, and that was something. Then he felt for his pouch, and there was some tobacco in it, and that was something more. Then he felt for matches, and he couldn't find any at all, and that shattered his hopes completely. Just as well for him, as he agreed when he came to his senses. Goodness knows what the striking of matches and the smell of tobacco would have brought on him out of dark holes in that horrible place. Still, at the moment, he felt very crushed. But in slapping all his pockets and feeling all round himself for matches, his hand came on the hilt of his little sword, the little dagger that he had got from the trolls, and that he had quite forgotten, nor did the goblin seem to have noticed it, as he wore it inside his breeches. Now he drew it out. It shone pale and dim before his eyes. "So it is an elvish blade too," he thought. and goblins are not very near, and yet not far enough. But somehow he was comforted. It was rather splendid to be wearing a blade made in Gondolin for the goblin wars, of which so many songs had sung. And also he'd noticed that such weapons made a great impression on goblins that came upon them suddenly. "Go back," he thought. "No good at all. Go sideways? Impossible. Go forward? Only thing to do. On we go." So up he got, and trotted along with his little sword held in front of him, and one hand feeling the wall, and his heart all of a patter and a pitter. Now certainly Bilbo was in what is called a tight place. But you must remember it was not quite so tight for him as it would have been for me or for you. Hobbits are not quite like ordinary people. And after all, if their holes are nice, cheery places and properly aired, quite different from the tunnels of the goblins, still they are more used to tunnelling than we are, and they don't easily lose their sense of direction underground. Not when their heads have recovered from being bumped. Also, they can move very quietly and hide easily and recover wonderfully from falls and bruises, and they have a fund of wisdom and wise sayings that men have mostly never heard or have forgotten long ago. I should not have liked to have been in Mr. Baggins's place, all the same. The tunnel seemed to have no end. All he knew was that it was still going down pretty steadily and keeping in the same direction in spite of a twist and a turn or two. There were passages leading off to the side every now and then, as he knew by the glimmer of his sword, or could feel with his hand on the wall. Of these he took no notice, except to hurry past for fear of goblins or half-imagined dark things coming out of them. On and on he went, and down and down, and still he heard no sound of anything except the occasional whirr of a bat by his ears, which startled him at first, till it became too frequent to bother about. I don't know how long he kept on like this, hating to go on, not daring to stop. On, on, until he was tireder than tired. It seemed like all the way to tomorrow and over it by the days beyond. Suddenly, without any warning, he trotted splash into water. Ugh! It was icy cold. That pulled him up sharp and short. He didn't know whether it was just a pool in the path, or the edge of an underground stream that crossed the passage, or the brink of a deep, dark subterranean lake. The sword was hardly shining at all. He stopped, and he could hear, when he listened hard, drops drip, drip, dripping from an unseen roof into the water below, but there seemed no other sort of sound. "So it is a pool or a lake, and not an underground river," he thought. Still, he didn't dare to wade out into the darkness. He couldn't swim. And he thought, too, of nasty, slimy things, with big, bulging, blind eyes, wriggling in the water. There are strange things living in the pools and lakes in the hearts of mountains. Fish whose fathers swam in, goodness only knows how many years ago, and never swam out again, while their eyes grew bigger and bigger from trying to see in the blackness. Also, there are other things more slimy than fish. Even in the tunnels and caves the goblins have made for themselves, there are other things living unbeknown to them that have sneaked in from outside to lie up in the dark. Some of these caves, too, go back in their beginnings to ages before the goblins, who only widened them and joined them up with passages, and the original owners are still there in odd corners, slinking and nosing about. Deep down here by the dark water lived old Gollum, a small, slimy creature. I don't know where he came from, nor who or what he was. He was Gollum, as darkness, except for two big round pale eyes in his thin face. He had a little boat, and he rowed about quite quietly on the lake, for lake it was, wide and deep and deadly cold. He paddled it with large feet dangling over the side, but never a ripple did he make, not he. He was looking out of his pale, lamp-like eyes for blind fish, which he grabbed with his long fingers as quick as thinking. He liked meat, too. Goblin, he thought, good, when he could get it. But he took care they never found him out. He just throttled them from behind, if they ever came down alone anywhere near the edge of the water while he was prowling about. They very seldom did, for they had a feeling that something unpleasant was lurking down there, down at the very roots of the mountain. They had come on the lake when they were tunneling down long ago, and they found they could go no further. So there their road ended in that direction, and there was no reason to go that way, unless the great goblin sent them. Sometimes he took a fancy for fish from the lake, and sometimes neither goblin nor fish came back. Actually, Gollum lived on a slimy island of rock in the middle of the lake. He was watching Bilbo now from the distance, with his pale eyes like telescopes. Bilbo couldn't see him, but he was wondering a lot about Bilbo, for he could see that he was no goblin at all. Gollum got into his boat and shot off from the island while Bilbo was sitting on the brink, altogether flummoxed and at the end of his way and his wits. Suddenly up came Gollum and whispered and hissed.
"Bless us and precious, my precious! I guess it's a choice feast. At least a tasty morsel it could make us, Gollum." And when he said, "Gollum," he made a horrible swallowing noise in his throat. That is how he got his name, though he always called himself My Precious.
The hobbit jumped nearly out of his skin when the hiss came in his ears, and he suddenly saw the pale eyes sticking out at him.
"Who are you?"
he said, thrusting his dagger in front of him.
"What is he, my precious?"
whispered Gollum, who always spoke to himself through never having anyone else to speak to. This is what he had come to find out, for he was not really very hungry at the moment, only curious. Otherwise he would have grabbed first and whispered afterwards.
"I am Mr. Bilbo Baggins. I've lost the dwarves, and I've lost the wizard, and I don't know where I am, and I don't want to know, if only I can get away."
"What's he got in his hands?"
said Gollum, looking at the sword, which he did not quite like.
"A sword, a blade which came out of Gondolin."
"Shh,"
said Gollum, and became quite polite.
"Perhaps you sits here and chats with it a bit, my precious. It likes riddles, perhaps it does it?"
He was anxious to appear friendly, at any rate for the moment, and until he found out more about the sword and the hobbit, whether he was quite alone really, whether he was good to eat, and whether Gollum was really hungry. Riddles were all he could think of. Asking them, and sometimes guessing them, had been the only game he had ever played with other funny creatures sitting in their holes in the long, long ago, before he lost all his friends and was driven away, alone, and crept down, down, into the dark under the mountains.
"Very well,"
said Bilbo, who was anxious to agree, until he found out more about the creature, whether he was quite alone, whether he was fierce or hungry, and whether he was a friend of the goblins.
"You ask first,"
he said, because he hadn't had time to think of a riddle. So Gollum hissed,
"What has roots, as nobody sees, is taller than trees. Up, up it goes, and yet never grows."
"Easy," said Bilbo. "Mountain, I suppose."
"Does it guess easy? It must have a competition with us, my precious. If precious asks and it doesn't answer, we eat it, my precious. If it asks us and we doesn't answer, then we does what it wants, eh? We shows it the way out, yes?"
"All right," said Bilbo, not daring to disagree, and nearly bursting his brain to think of riddles that could save him from being eaten.
30 white horses on a red hill. First they champ, then they stamp, then they stand still."
That was all he could think of to ask. The idea of eating was rather on his mind. It was rather an old one, too, and Gollum knew the answer as well as you do.
"Chestnuts, chestnuts," he hissed. "Teeth, teeth, my precious, but we has only six."
Then he asked his second.
"Voiceless it cries, wingless flutters, toothless bites, mouthless mutters."
"Half a moment,"
cried Bilbo, who was still thinking uncomfortably about eating. Fortunately, he had once heard something rather like this before, and getting his wits back, he thought of the answer.
"Wind. Wind, of course,"
he said. And he was so pleased that he made up one on the spot.
"This'll puzzle the nasty little underground creature," he thought. "An eye in a blue face saw an eye in a green face. That eye is like to this eye," said the first eye, "but in low place, not in high place."
"Shh, shh,"
said Gollum. He had been underground a long, long time, and was forgetting this sort of thing. But just as Bilbo was beginning to hope that the wretch would not be able to answer, Gollum brought up memories of ages and ages and ages before, when he lived with his grandmother in a hole in a bank by a river.
"Shh, shh, my precious,"
he said.
"Sun on the daisies, it means, it does."
But these ordinary, above-ground, everyday sort of riddles were tiring for him. Also, they reminded him of days when he had been less lonely and sneaky and nasty, and that put him out of temper. What is more, they made him hungry. So this time he tried something a bit more difficult and more unpleasant.
"It cannot be seen, cannot be felt, cannot be heard, cannot be smelt. It lies behind stars and under hills, and empty holes it fills. It comes first and follows after, ends life, kills laughter."
Unfortunately for Gollum, Bilbo had heard that sort of thing before, and the answer was all round him anyway.
"Dark," he said, without even scratching his head or putting on his thinking cap. "A box without hinges, key or lid, yet golden treasure inside is hid,"
he asked to gain time, until he could think of a really hard one. This he thought a dreadfully easy chestnut, though he had not asked it in the usual words. But it proved a nasty poser for Gollum. he hissed to himself. And still he didn't answer. He whispered and spluttered. After some while, Bilbo became impatient.
Well, what is it? The answer's not a kettle boiling over, as you seem to think from the noise you're making.
Give us a chance. Let it give us a chance, my precious.
Well, said Bilbo, after giving him a long chance, what about your guess?
But suddenly Gollum remembered thieving from nests long ago, and sitting under the river bank, teaching his grandmother to suck.
Exes, he hissed. Exes it is.
Then he asked,
alive without breath, as cold as death, never thirsty, ever drinking, all in mail, never clinking.
He also, in his turn, thought this was a dreadfully easy one, because he was always thinking of the answer. But he could not remember anything better at the moment, he was so flustered by the egg question. All the same, it was a poser for poor Bilbo, who never had anything to do with the water if he could help it. I imagine you know the answer, of course, or can guess it as easy as winking, since you are sitting comfortably at home and have not the danger of being eaten to disturb your thinking. Bilbo sat and cleared his throat once or twice, but no answer came. After a while, Gollum began to hiss with pleasure to himself.
Is it nice, my precious? Is it juicy? Is it scrumptiously crunchable?
He began to peer at Bilbo out of the darkness.
Half a moment, said the hobbit, shivering. I gave you a good long chance just now.
It must make haste, haste, said Gollum,
beginning to climb out of his boat onto the shore to get at Bilbo. But when he put his long, webby foot in the water, a fish jumped out in a fright and fell on Bilbo's toes.
Ah, he said, it is cold and clammy.
And so he guessed.
Fish, fish, he cried. It is fish.
Gollum was dreadfully disappointed, but Bilbo asked another riddle as quick as ever he could, so that Gollum had to get back into his boat and think.
No legs lay on one leg. Two legs sat near on three legs. Four legs got some.
It was not really the right time for this riddle, but Bilbo was in a hurry. Gollum might have had some trouble guessing it if he had asked it at another time. As it was, talking of fish, no legs, was not so very difficult, and after that the rest was easy. Fish on a little table, man at table sitting on a stool, the cat has the bones. That, of course, is the answer, and Gollum soon gave it. Then he thought the time had come to ask something hard and horrible. This is what he said.
This thing all things devours. Birds, beasts, trees, flowers. Gnaws iron, bites steel, grinds hard stones to meal, slays king, ruins town, and beats high mountain down.
Poor Bilbo sat in the dark, thinking of all the horrible names of all the giants and ogres he had ever heard told of in tales, but not one of them had done all these things. He had a feeling that the answer was quite different, and that he ought to know it, but he could not think of it. He began to get frightened, and that is bad for thinking. Gollum began to get out of his boat. He flapped into the water and paddled to the bank. Bilbo could see his eyes coming towards him. His tongue seemed to stick in his mouth. He wanted to shout out,
"Give me more time! Give me time!"
But all that came out with a sudden squeal was,
"Time! Time!"
Bilbo was saved by pure luck, for that, of course, was the answer. Gollum was disappointed once more, and now he was getting angry, and also tired of the game. It had made him very hungry indeed. This time he didn't go back to the boat. He sat down in the dark by Bilbo. That made the hobbit most dreadfully uncomfortable and scattered his wits.
"It's got to ask us a question, my precious. Yes, yes, yes. Just one more question to guess. Yes, yes,"
said Gollum. But Bilbo simply could not think of any question with that nasty, wet, cold thing sitting next to him and pawing and poking him. He scratched himself. He pinched himself. Still he could not think of anything.
"Ask us, ask us,"
said Gollum. Bilbo pinched himself and slapped himself. He gripped on his little sword. He even felt in his pocket with his other hand. There he found the ring he had picked up in the passage and forgotten about.
"What have I got in my pocket?"
he said aloud. He was talking to himself, but Gollum thought it was a riddle, and he was frightfully upset.
"Not fair! Not fair!" he hissed. "It isn't fair, my precious, is it, to ask us what it's got in its nasty little pockets?"
Bilbo, seeing what had happened, and having nothing better to ask, stuck to his question.
"What have I got in my pocket?" he said louder.
"Shh!"
hissed Gollum.
"It must give us three guesses, my precious. Three guesses."
"Very well, guess away," said Bilbo.
"Hens,"
said Gollum.
"Wrong,"
said Bilbo, who had luckily just taken his hand out again. "Guess again."
"Shh!"
said Gollum, more upset than ever. He thought of all the things he kept in his own pockets. Fish bones, goblin's teeth, wet shells, a bit of bat wing, a sharp stone to sharpen his fangs on, and other nasty things. He tried to think what other people kept in their pockets.
"Knife,"
he said at last.
"Wrong,"
said Bilbo, who had lost his some time ago.
"Last guess."
Now Gollum was in a much worse state than when Bilbo had asked him the egg question. He hissed and spluttered and rocked himself backwards and forwards and slapped his feet on the floor and wriggled and squirmed, but still he did not dare to waste his last guess.
"Come on," said Bilbo. "I am waiting."
He tried to sound bold and cheerful, but he didn't feel at all sure how the game was going to end, whether Gollum guessed right or not.
"Time's up," he said.
"String or nothing,"
shrieked Gollum, which was not quite fair, working in two guesses at once.
"Both wrong,"
cried Bilbo, very much relieved, and he jumped at once to his feet, put his back to the nearest wall, and held out his little sword. He knew, of course, that the riddle game was sacred and of immense antiquity, and even wicked creatures were afraid to cheat when they played at it. But he felt he could not trust this slimy thing to keep any promise at a pinch. Any excuse would do for him to slide out of it. And after all, that last question had not been a genuine riddle, according to the ancient laws. But at any rate, Gollum did not at once attack him. He could see the sword in Bilbo's hand. He sat still, shivering and whispering, At last Bilbo could wait no longer.
"Well," he said, "what about your promise? I want to go. You must show me the way."
"Did we say so, precious? Show the nasty little Baggins the way out? Yes, yes. But what has it got in its pocket, says, eh? Not string, precious, but not nothing. Oh, no, Colum."
"Never you mind," said Wilbur. "A promise is a promise."
"Cross it is. Impatient, precious,"
hissed Gollum.
"But it must wait. Yes, it must. We can't go up the tunnel so hasty. We must go and get some things first, yes. Things to help us."
"Well, hurry up," said Bilbo, relieved to think of Gollum going away. He thought he was just making an excuse and did not mean to come back. What was Gollum talking about? What useful thing could he keep out on the dark lake? But he was wrong. Gollum did mean to come back. He was angry now and hungry, and he was a miserable, wicked creature, and already he had a plan. Not far away was his island, of which Bilbo knew nothing, and there in his hiding place he kept a few wretched oddments and one very beautiful thing, very beautiful, very wonderful. He had a ring, a golden ring, a precious ring.
"My birthday present,"
he whispered to himself, as he had often done in the endless dark days.
"That's what we want now, yes. We want it."
He wanted it because it was a ring of power, and if you slipped that ring on your finger, you were invisible. Only in the full sunlight could you be seen, and then only by your shadow, and that would be shaky and faint.
"My birthday present. It came to me on my birthday, my precious."
So he had always said to himself. But who knows how Gollum came by that present, ages ago in the old days when such rings were still at large in the world. Perhaps even the master who ruled them could not have said. Gollum used to wear it at first, till it tired him, and then he kept it in a pouch next to his skin, till it galled him, and now, usually, he hid it in a hole in the rock on his island, and was always going back to look at it. And still sometimes he put it on when he could not bear to be parted from it any longer, or when he was very, very hungry and tired of fish. Then he would creep along dark passages looking for stray goblins. He might even venture into places where the torches were lit and made his eyes blink and smart, for he would be safe. Oh, yes, quite safe. No one would see him. No one would notice him till he had his fingers on their throat. Only a few hours ago he had worn it and caught a small goblin imp. How it squeaked! He still had a bone or two left to gnaw, but he wanted something softer.
"Quite safe, yes," he whispered to himself. "It won't see us, will it, my precious? No, it won't see us, and its nasty little sword would be useless. Yes, quite."
That is what was in his wicked little mind as he slipped suddenly from Bilbo's side and flapped back to his boat and went off into the dark. Bilbo thought he had heard the last of him. Still he waited a while, for he had no idea how to find his way out alone. Suddenly he heard a screech. It sent a shiver down his back. Gollum was cursing and wailing away in the gloom, not very far off by the sound of it.
He was on his island, scrabbling here and there, searching and seeking in vain.
"Where is it? Where is it?"
Bilbo heard him crying.
"Lost it is, my precious, lost, lost! Tessa